This is a Day One podcast extra, bringing you a conversation between our host, Peter Wallace, and a special guest. For more information about Day One, which brings you outstanding preachers from mainline Protestant churches, visit our website at dayone.org.
Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. This is Peter Wallace, and with me today are the Reverend Dr. David J. Lose, who is Academic Dean and the Marbury E. Anderson Chair in Biblical Preaching at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Reverend Dr. Mary Hinkle Shore, who is Associate Dean for First Theological Degree Programs at Luther Seminary and also an Associate Professor of New Testament. Thanks to you both for being here.
It's good to be with you, Peter.
David, if you would, give me a sense of the historical background of Luther Seminary. What is its past and where is it heading?
Like a lot of mainline seminaries in the 19th and 20th centuries, Luther today is the amalgam of a variety of mergers. As the churches merged, their seminaries merged. And so now it's in St. Paul. It's the largest of the eight Lutheran seminaries of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And it has a variety of different kinds of degrees. Seminaries used to be simply kind of pastor factories, and now they train a wide variety of persons for a wide variety of careers. What they all have in common is that they're all oriented toward leadership of today's Christian communities.
Well, Mary, if you could, David has mentioned that the kinds of students, but give us a little better idea of who the students are at Luther and why are they going to seminary now?
We're a residential seminary, and some people think of us as kind of an old type of seminary where something like 200 students would live in community on campus. But that only accounts for about a third or less than a third of our student body. Many of our students are commuting from some distance. And then a growing number of students are taking courses online and supplementing a residential program with online courses or doing distributed learning programs where they work in churches, either in children, youth, and family ministry or in other kinds of lay ministry roles while they attend seminary.
You taught, Mary, for a number of years, and you still teach at least one class a year, but you're doing more administrative work now with this distributed learning program. Have you enjoyed that change? How do you
You know, I really like the work, and I miss reading the Bible with students. That's the hard part about this. I have only a few times a year when I really do much teaching in the seminary setting. What I like about administration, though, is the opportunity to look at kind of a logic puzzle, if you will, and be able to see how something might change to make a program work more smoothly, to offer courses in different ways so that students can make progress toward degrees, to support faculty who want to teach in, say, with enhanced technology and need some help to do that. And I'll look at things like that and ask some people to, you know, have a meeting and talk about how we can solve some problems or meet some of these challenges going forward in an administrative way. And then just kind of puzzle through things with people.
That's fun.
It is.
And David, I know you're involved, of course, largely in the seminary's strategic plan for teaching and supporting biblical preaching. Define biblical preaching for us in the sense that you teach it. What does it involve?
I don't think there's any one kind of biblical preaching. I'd like to say that what I do is the only kind of biblical preaching, but I don't think that's entirely truthful. I think sometimes of the quote from Mark Twain where someone asked him, "Do you believe in infant baptism?" And he said, "Believe in it. I've seen it." And I think there's the same way. I've seen, you know, a variety of different kinds of biblical preaching. One is the classic expository sermon where you treat a passage of Scripture in a very didactic teaching way, moving through verse by verse. And that's clearly biblical preaching, is taking the text so seriously. Another kind that is, I think, more prevalent in African-American congregations is a rendering of the biblical story in a three-dimensional way, that the distance between the hearer's world and the biblical world vanishes, so that you are Leah or you are Jacob, and that story kind of swallows you whole and has been a really powerful tradition. And then the third kind that I've seen is probably the kind that I strive to practice, and it's peculiarly the hardest one for me to describe or find a name for it. But I think they're what I'm after, or what I hope hearers get out of a biblical sermon that I'm trying to teach my students to preach, is that there's some dynamic, there's some movement, there's some event in the text, or that the text is describing some encounter between the living God and humans. And that what the sermon grows out of is not so much a verse-by-verse translation of meaning, but that same experience of whether it's a move from fear to courage, or hopelessness to hope, or a sense of being encountered by God and given a new identity, but that whatever that dynamic is that animates the story is finally the same movement or dynamic that animates the sermon.
And you spoke on the Day One program a little bit about some of the resources that the seminary offers to preachers, the Center for Biblical Preaching. Could you say a little bit more about that program?
Yeah, the seminary has invested heavily in recent years in developing what we're calling the Center for Biblical Preaching at Luther Seminary, a place to offer resources for practicing preachers. Two in particular I'd highlight. One is a webpage, which it's, boy, you say webpage, it doesn't sound that exciting, but, you know, log on to workingpreacher.org and you will encounter what I've at times described the newest, coolest resource for preachers on the web. It's not a clearinghouse of links. It's not sermons for the desperate preacher. It's not canned illustrations. What it is reflections on the biblical passages that are coming up each week. It's reflections on the craft of preaching. It's reflections on the culture and context we live in, to enable preachers to roll up their sleeves and go to work with some help and some company and some inspiration. So it's been amazingly well-received so far, and that's gratifying. We spent about 18 months designing and preparing that, soliciting contributors, and an inordinate amount of money invested in it. And the resource finally is something we're giving away. It's not subscription-based. There are no fees. There are no ads. It is absolutely out of a sense of ministry to the church to equip today's preachers to proclaim the word with power and imagination.
And that web address again?
It is workingpreacher.org, O-R-G.
One of the things I like about that site is that it combines work from professors, exegetical work, theological work, with regular columns from pastors who are preaching and in ministry in the parish setting.
And then also in the company of preachers.
Yeah, the second resource I'd highlight is a quarterly subscription-based resource. It comes on either a CD or is downloadable. And it chooses each quarter a topic, opening a sermon, closing a sermon, preaching the Old Testament, and has 15 to 20 minutes of teaching, kind of a light continuing ed that is substance but not for a great period of time, and then followed by four or five sermons that illustrate that. And it's partly has a teaching function, but even more I think it has a more spiritual dimension, which is where the name comes from. It is really easy to feel very isolated as a preacher. Mm-hmm. You work very hard on your sermons, and you hope that the people are edified or brought to faith through them, but not that often are you preached to. Or are you on the receiving end of a sermon? And so this is a CD or a podcast that someone can take with them, whether making hospital visits or, you know, washing the car or running errands, and just listen to a sermon and feel the word addressed to him or her and be not just instructed, although that's valuable, but inspired, which I think in some ways is even more important.
And that is available through the seminary's website, correct?
Yeah, if you Google Center for Biblical Preaching, It'll take you right there, or on theworkingpreacher.org. If you go to, I think it's featured on the homepage, and you can also go to the lifelong learning section, and there's a link there that'll take you right to it.
What are some of the ways the seminary serves lay people?
We have a lay school of theology. There are a couple of sessions a year, and the seminary faculty teach courses. I've taught a course in the historical Jesus and another course in reading the Sermon on the Mount. These are 10-hour courses over 5 weeks, and people come and work through a textbook and discuss with one another course material that's very much like seminary material, but geared always toward the experience and the life experience of the people in the classroom.
A few years ago, the seminary launched its own production company, too, called Luther Productions, and now produces several curriculum ranging from 4 to 6 week classes to 12 to 16 week classes, sometimes audio-based CDs people can listen to in a class or in the car, sometimes often DVD-based, which persons can purchase for their own use, or I think what's often the way they're used, pastors will purchase them and then have a series of adult forums. So it comes with, it's often an interview format where mm-hmm. we have a variety of faculty talking about different topics, and then it comes with study guides and really makes for, I think, a great adult learning situation.
Let's talk a little bit about the state of preaching in the mainline churches, especially today. How would you characterize, this is an old mode of communication, the sermon. Where are we today?
Every time I get discouraged about current preaching, which probably occurs with some frequency, I read some of the writings of the Reformers, Luther or Calvin or others, who really eviscerated the preachers of their day, and it gives me a little think, well, things haven't gotten much worse. I don't know if they've gotten better. You know, I think mainline preaching needs to find confidence in its voice again. Mm-hmm. I think we've been pulled in two directions or two models. One is the desire to, or the feeling of pressure that you need to compete with the Lenos and the Lettermans and be pretty chatty mm-hmm. or have the technological means at your disposal to entertain as well as inform persons on the one hand. And on the other hand, the other models that are out there tend to be very conservative, very didactic, propositional preaching. And in the midst of that, I think a lot of preachers, mainline preachers, are trying to find their voice. And I think one of the things we've tried to do consistently is to point them to Scripture and to say, honestly, if you hug the text, if you work the text, if you read it closely, you'll find something there that's worth talking about. And what you'll find there is something true to say about our life and about God's action and commitment to our lives in this world.
There is something old about this means of communication, one human being speaking to another human being. But it's also stood the test of time. And I think the technology-free zone or whatever of preaching that doesn't have music in the background or PowerPoint on the screen or whatever during the sermon has the appeal of being a word addressed to hearers. And in sometimes that's conversation, a kind of conversational style might be more of a proclamation or more of a kind of gathering of the people together. So it's not just always an individualized word, but a word addressed to a congregation. Who are we in this community, or who are we in this time? The preacher could ask. So I don't worry so much about, I know lots of preachers feel the need to offer sort of multimedia experience. I think words can do an awful lot to create a world, to change a reality, to be vivid enough that hearers begin to imagine themselves anew. And so I don't think technology is the only way to get a kind of vivid experience of the gospel. I also would say that some of us don't use it, and I'm kind of sort of a dance with the one who brought you sort of preacher, and it's the style's very wordy, very conversational, and not at all. I don't know that any of my colleagues do very much with kind of visual visualizations in preaching.
If you think about some of the most powerful moments of communication in your life, there may be a really memorable encounter with a particular film or a song from your youth, but most of those moments are going to be when you were engaged in deep and meaningful and candid conversation with a sibling, with a parent, with a friend, with a beloved. And so I think there's a lot of reason to have confidence that preaching is going to be around for a long time. Walter Ong has said there's nothing more powerful than one person speaking the truth to another. And I think there's a lot to that. But that means then there's a premium not simply on the content, kind of what is said, but the character or the quality of how it is said. And if we imagine, if preachers imagine, my task today is to read this biblical passage carefully with these people in front of me in mind, and that my calling is to say something true about them in light of this book, tell the truth, I think people would be interested in hearing that.
Enough, yeah.
That's enough.
Both of you are scheduled to participate in the Festival of Homiletics in Minneapolis this year, which is very convenient for you. What will you be talking about there?
I'm going to be talking about how one thinks about and actually preaches in a postmodern world where so much seems up for grabs, the way we make sense of the world, our sense of reality, when tried and true traditions don't seem to be holding up anymore. How do you offer a word of truth in a world that's very suspicious of truth?
Very relevant. Mary?
My workshop is titled The 8-Hour Sermon, and it's really about spending about 8 hours as a preacher to prepare a sermon. I'll focus on the process of discovering something in the text and then developing that discovery so that, as David was talking about earlier, you're doing in the sermon what the text is doing, whether it's moving a hearer from hopelessness to hope or from fear to courage, something like that. And then designing a sermon so that you've got an idea and it's developed, and what do you put first, second, and third, and what do you throw out? And then delivering the sermon, practicing, writing for the ear, all of those sorts of skills. And we'll just run through those and see what some of the preachers in the room have to add to that.
I bet that's going to be a popular one. I'm curious about your personal spiritual disciplines, your personal spiritual relationship with God. Do you integrate that into the work you do at the seminary or in preaching? How does that work for each of you?
We have chapel every day on our campus, and that's probably my most steady devotional practice. I know that because when I was on sabbatical and did not live in St. Paul, I missed it terribly, and I found myself sort of doing more work in the biblical text on my own because I didn't have all those friends and colleagues working on my behalf each day. That's one of the ways, I suppose, the word encounters me on a regular basis.
I think I've always had a hard time thinking about the spiritual life as something separate or something I do apart from everything else. And so I have tried instead to cultivate an awareness of what God is up to and doing in the ordinary, whether it's the ordinary of preparing a lecture for a class or presentation for a class, or the ordinary of preparing a sermon That's not as sometimes as easy as it sounds. You're so caught up on doing the work
right. That
it doesn't feel very devotional, especially if it's Saturday night and it's late and you haven't heard a sermon yet. But there is a way in which I think we all preach first to ourselves. That is, we hear a word that is meaningful to us, and it's very difficult to stand up and speak a word to others with confidence if it hasn't rung true for yourself. And so there's a really rich opportunity there. But then not only in those particular moments with Scripture, but also prayers around mealtime or prayers in worship or singing a hymn in worship or saying prayers at bedtime with my kids. Or there are a variety of ways in which you can be mindful of God at work in your work relationships and your social relationships and all the varied ways. And I think cultivating that sense of awareness is really nurturing.
I know both of you probably do a lot of reading for your teaching and so forth, but I'm wondering, is there something that you've been reading lately that has spurred your thinking in an exciting way?
You read a lot more than me. I read mostly
kids'
books.
I read novels. Yeah, I read novels, and I'm reading a kind of sequel to a first book. And now the sequel is called "The Used World." I don't know if you know Haven Kimmel. Her first book is, or her first novel is called "The Solace of Leaving Early," and one of its main characters is a congregational minister in rural Indiana. And the story is of a couple of little girls whose parents die tragically, and this congregational minister and a couple of other people in town are trying to help these girls, children, find their way through that experience. And The Used World I just started, and it's set in a kind of antique junk store sort of setting. I have no idea where it's going, but I'm happy to see that the pastor is making another appearance in this novel. I love to read just regular sort of everyday, really character-driven novels. Richard Rousseau is another novelist that I read, and Anne Tyler, and I sometimes put together independent studies with small groups of students on campus, actually, and we read novels and talk about how redemption gets played out in this story, or how sin is a part of this story, and that kind of work. Just, it's something like David's spiritual discipline of looking at life for those themes, but it's looking at fictional life.
Children's books.
Got little kids, so I spend a whole lot of time reading fairy tales and adventure stories. And sometimes I'm a little alarmed at how similar they are to the Bible. But also, there's something instructive about that, too, that what the Bible is offering is something that connects to our world and yet makes promises beyond our ordinary experience, that there's something beyond the mundane, the physical, the limited, and, find that. I read this, it's been out for a few years now, but I recommend it to almost everyone I meet. Leif Enger's Peace Like a River, if you have not
read
it, set in Minnesota in the 50s. And it's just this profound story of grace and redemption and struggle. And, you know, I'm the same way. I think the stories that I relate to are the ones that tell the truth about the world. And, you know, faith for me has never been a way to sidestep what's right in front of you, but to give you a way to think deeply about what's right there. And I think that's what literature does. It's another way of offering the world or helping you make sense of this incredible thing we're all a part of.
David and Mary, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
It's our pleasure.